Your competition is asleep. It's you against the world, and if you want to win, we need to get a few things straight. Your business is a mental war. Your success is a mental war. And making money is a game. And the game of money starts in your mind. This podcast exists to help you weaponize your brain through advanced marketing, mindset, and money concepts. To have what others don't, you need to know what others won't. Your future fortune awaits. Welcome to the War Plan Podcast. Hey, my friend, welcome back to the War Plan Podcast. How are you? Have all of your hopes and dreams come true? You still working on it? I hope you're doing good. Can you believe we're in the middle of Q2 already? And I don't know. Did you earn your bachelor's degree in pain or your master's degree in suffering yet? I have a special treat for you today. I got two guests on the podcast. It happened randomly. God does weird things. Dots get connected. I'm in the studio working this weekend because we have an epic live four-day challenge starting this week. Just go to frapchallenge.com, frapchallenge.com if you're interested in that. But I had the pleasure to be introduced to Mike Burke. Mike Burke, you don't know him yet, but you're going to want to, is the brother-in-law of my good friend Pat Clark. And if you don't know either of their names, just take my word for it. They're super smart, entrepreneur guru people, good-hearted, fighting for the little guy people. And Pat, I've known for years. He came from nothing, an abusive living situation and trailer park and just stress, and built, you know, a multi-million dollar business. And now he has this huge franchise called Bright Brothers. And we're going to talk about principles for success. And then Mike, he's the founder of Sun Stoppers. It's an enormous solar film thing. I'll let him explain it. And they do gajillions of dollars in revenue. He travels the world. He inspires people. He was an overweight kid with ADD, picked on, couldn't read till sixth grade. And now he is a very successful person. So with that being said, let's help all the people, guys. How are you guys feeling?
Man, this is amazing. I love the studio. Yeah. Pat, thanks for bringing me here.
Yeah, man, this is what it's about right here.
The studio is so cool, right?
It is.
Yeah, it was actually already built like this when we bought it. You know, that's why I bought it. I'm like, yeah, this is insane. So, yeah, a lot of good things coming out of here, this podcast being one of them. Mike, could you maybe go first, just introduce yourself, your background?
Yeah, so my name is Mike Burke. I own Sun Stoppers. I actually started doing window tinting in high school and developed my first brand, Lightning Mikes, which was just me tinting, which was more of a window tinting-based business. I got into accessories, started doing accessories on cars during the Fast and the Furious days, then migrated and said, wow, buying accessories, doing lifts, doing stereos, doing 500 different things to cars wasn't making any money. And when you're taking loans out on your personal vehicles to make payroll, I needed to change my business model. And I said, hey, man, it was time to focus on what I was really good at. My passion, it was cars and helping people, but the gratification is seeing a transformation. I'm an artist at heart. I have an art gallery here in Texas that I donate paintings to people for my charity. I do all types of different creative things, but I'm deep down an artist. My ADD brain sees things before other people can see them. So what I've done is I've mastered the art of window tinting and then trained multiple people on how to do what I do, and opened up multiple locations across the world and partnered with my manufacturer, Expel, and they saw what I was doing to help a lot of the little small guys. And now I'm doing some speaking and coaching and have a podcast called Real Talk with Mike Burke. And now I'm here with you talking with some really amazing people. And I love what you're doing to help a lot of small businesses. And that's my passion, is to give back. Once you've made a certain level of success in life, what are you going to do with it? Are you going to sit at home and brag about how much you've bought and how many things you own? Or are you going to turn around and make a difference in this world and help other people?
Can I get a witness?
That's it.
All right. Well, Pat, catch us up for people that aren't familiar with you. What's your story, Pat?
So, you know, started when I was 20 years old in the exterior cleaning industry with a company called Precision Pro Wash. A lot of pain and suffering, like you said, right? Not knowing anything about business and going out and just making a homeowner happy, right? And growing that thing.
Shaking hands, kissing babies, knocking doors.
That's it.
Boots on the ground, bog marketing, hustle and grind.
A lot of tears throughout the way. But growing that business and then hiring my first employee and not knowing anything about that and failing a lot throughout that, but getting a business coach, right, and showing me kind of the path, like what is possible, and because growing up in a trailer park, right, making $50 and mowing lawns and not knowing about money, blew my mind. And I think that was the biggest thing, was like, what is possible out there for anybody? Like, if you go out there and hustle, you can make anything happen, right?
That gives me a good question to kick off this whole interview here. So one of the things I've noticed is that what people think big is, is a indicator on how long it's going to take for them to achieve it. And what I mean is if you think that $1 million revenue business is big, then it will be for you. And so think of like Mark Zuckerberg's daughter or something. And so she's going to start a company. Her frame of reference is already orders of magnitude bigger than everybody else, right?
Yeah.
So she kind of like accidentally hits $1 million in her first week on her way to what she thinks is big. And so when you grow up in poverty, like your frame of reference is so limited.
Yes.
Because I remember when we hit $300,000 in revenue with my first company, I thought I was like Jeff Bezos or something. That was like my lifetime obituary goal. You know? And so you move really slow because you don't even understand how big the opportunity is.
Yeah.
And I'm curious both of your thoughts on that as an idea. What do you think?
Well, I'm going to dive in a little bit more into that. My dad coached me years ago. He was an accountant. And he would say, son, he would call me a busy fool. And that's all he called me when I first started out in my business, because I was diversifying into many different things. And my dad, thankfully, he gave me some fuel. I have a marketing degree from college, and he was very disappointed in me when I opened up a window tinting business and accessory business. He looked at me and said I was an embarrassment to him.
Did he really?
I swear.
Oh, that's like... that's a core memory and not a good one.
My dad said I was an embarrassment to him and my mother because he wanted more for me, okay? It came from a heartfelt place, but it was like he looked at me as like an oil change mechanic. He looked at me like I was a grease monkey. And he said to me, I didn't pay for you to go to college to be a effing window tinner. So it gave me the fuel to prove him wrong.
A nice chip on your shoulder can be helpful.
Big chip. I lost all my friends. When I got out and started my own business, I wasn't the banker. I wasn't the guy. I had a college degree. I was one of them. I was playing golf and playing cards until I was no longer invited to play cards and play golf. I wasn't invited to be one of the guys because I worked on cars. I would go out in public with my friends and they'd go, hey, man, I'm a network engineer at Cisco, or I'm a banker, I'm a program whatever. They lived for titles. Years ago, everybody wants to go around bragging about what title they are. I'm a VP of whatever, right? No, I'm the janitor. I'm the maid. I'm the entrepreneur guy that wears every hat in the business, right? So my dad would call me a busy fool when he looked at my numbers and he goes, son, you did $1 million in sales, but you spent $999,000 in overhead and payroll and you made $1. Right. So literally I was going broke, chasing the big number, the big top number. And when I chase the top number, what I coach now is chase the bottom number. So when people are over here going, I want $1 million in sales, no you don't. What do you want a net income this year? And how do we clean up the books? How do we clean up your expenses? How do we get you stop drinking at the convenience store? How do we do every little thing you can do to put more net profit into your pocket? Because it takes money to make money. And if you don't have any money, you can't grow your business. So
that's what this challenge I'm doing next week is all about. We didn't even talk about that. It's all about profit, you know, revenue for
make
vanity,
profit.
Profits for sanity.
So I was not – I have an accounting background, which means I took a lot of accounting classes in college, which does not mean I am an accountant, but I do understand the checkbook going up or checkbook going down. So my accounting skills were every month – if my checking account went up, I was making money. Right. If my checking account went down, I was losing money. So I had a downward trend. I had an upward trend. And I put everything in the bank, and I spent everything on one credit card until I got another credit card. And then I maxed out more credit cards to try to get my business afloat. And I realized that I was very, very good at one thing, which was tinting cars. I was tinting 10 to 15 cars a day by myself in a shop while my accessory guy was selling accessories and rims and tires and all these other stereos. Well, we would buy the rims, buy the stereos, buy the equipment, come in, there'd be problem after problem after problem. And there would be costly problems. So the guy would order the wrong lug nuts, or he'd order the wrong wheel pattern, or he would order something wrong. And we would have to sit on those parts until we could resell them.
And they took all the profit
And they took all my profit away. So all of a sudden, window tint was a roll of film, a sticker that goes on a window. People like it. They pay for it. If they didn't like it, I could rip it off, and I had $6 in material costs, so I could replace it very easily. And then we started doing volume. And I started listening to my restaurant friends and going, listen, if you're going to make money in this business, you're going to do volume.
Well, was there, when did you start realizing how big the opportunity was?
I think after I closed my very first store, I failed. The very first store I ever opened up, I went from selling cars, moved to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, opened up my very first tent shop, and within 9 months, I went out of business. Mm-hmm. And what happened is I lived a lifestyle of thinking I was a business owner, right? I'd go around to every bar. I own a business. I'm a business owner. I'm the man, right? The business is just going to run itself, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, I had employee issues, stealing, theft, money management issues, cash flow issues, mm-hmm. where I started doing dealership work. And the dealership work, holy cow, what's net 30?
Yeah.
Holy cow, what's net 60?
Yeah, those are fun.
Holy mm-hmm. cow, my credit card's due. Oh my God, the rent's power is due. So I went down with 30 grand in the bank, and I came back home with minus 300 in 9 months. And then I sold cars a little bit more, and I went back to doing what I really enjoyed doing, which was tinting, and I became mobile for 3 years. So I ran the business mobile for 3 years.
But that second time, you just...
I learned.
You were thinking bigger, or were you just more aware that you need to professionalize?
No, I literally, the second time around, I thought smaller. Mm. I said, how do I net more money?
Yeah.
I was thinking too big at first.
Mm.
And so what happened is my dreams couldn't outweigh my wallet. And so if you don't have the wallet to support the dreams, think small first. You've got to hit first base before you hit second base.
One of the things when I do workshops live, sometimes I'll trick the crowd. And I'll go around and I'll ask everybody, what do you want? Most of the time people don't know what they want. They only know what they don't want. But that's
right.
a different thing. Mm-hmm. But they'll say things like, I want to be debt free. I want a second home. I want to travel. I want a vacation. I want to pay cash for my kids' college, et cetera, or charitable. I want to build an orphanage. And then what I help them realize is that every single thing that every person said is actually only one thing, and it's money. But it feels gross and icky and bad, like you're a bad person to say, I want more money. And specifically, mm-hmm. not just money, it's profit. You can only pay for your dreams with profit. You can't pay for your dreams with revenue, right?
Yeah.
But people have a hard time just saying, I want to make this much mm-hmm. above my burn rate of my personal lifestyle. And they feel like they're a bad person. I go to you, Pat. What are your thoughts on this whole thing?
Well, you just hit it. Like, it blows me away how people don't talk about money. Like, you know, growing up, we never talked about money. It was like this scary thing. We didn't have any, so why would we talk about it anyway? So, like, when it goes back to that comment raised, everything is relevant. So for me, it was getting myself out of my circle, right? Like, getting into a room that people talked about money.
Yeah.
Because I didn't, and we were afraid of money, and I had to break that in my brain because I didn't want to make money because I didn't want people to think of me differently.
Right.
And I was like, I got this business, we're actually making some money, but it was scary, and it was holding me back.
You can't celebrate your wins with all relationships.
Yeah.
Like, and it's a really sad thing. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the quotes I love is, be very cautious of people that don't clap and cheer when you win.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come out of that, I mean, that happens. Relationships are burned.
I'm going to add something to this. One thing I have said in many seminars before, money is either a tool or a weapon. Decide which one you're going to use. The tool is you can build things with money. You can hire more people. You can employ more people. You can help more people. Okay, with money, with profit from people who think bigger are going to hire more people. Mm-hmm. They're going to change people's lives through making money. Mm. Or you can use it as a weapon, make the money, and you can hurt other people with it. You can tie up people in court. You can sue people. You can get lawyers. You can be the bully. Which one are you with money?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are you going to be the guy that has money and help more people? Are you going to be the guy with money and hurt more people? I think that's a big decision you need to make early on in your career. What are you going to do with the money? Are you going to hurt people or help people?
You know, some of the greediest people I've met are very poor. Not always. There's no always, but it's a thing. And some of the most money-obsessed people I meet are poor. You know, it cracks me up when middle-class people or corporate people, they say things like money isn't everything. And then I ask them, well, why do you spend 50 hours a week trying to get more of it? And so we pretend like it's not important, even though it's critically important. Yeah. Zig Ziglar said, money isn't everything, but it's similar to air because it's the only thing you can think about when you don't have enough of it. Oh. Right? And it's like, so there's so much I want to say about that. And
there is.
I don't know. It's a mindset thing, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it brings me back too. Like, money was the thing. I wanted to do $1 million, right? Like, with my exterior cleaning company. That was my goal. Because, I don't know, it was $1 million. Everybody kind of thinks of $1 million.
I call it a placeholder goal. It's because that's what the people all say they want to do. So, yes. You're like, yeah, me too. I want that.
But when you get there, things change. Like, my why changed, right? It was like, you get to $1 million, you're like, wait, this isn't all what it's cracked out to be, right?
You just have a regular life.
But money helps you. Like, you said it the best, I think, on a podcast, was like, money is just good deed tokens.
Yeah, so, certificates of good deeds.
Yeah, and I took that because, like, I was able to buy a car
I don't understand.
I was able to.
Suri, coming in. Yeah, Suri, what are your thoughts? Go ahead.
But no, I was able to buy a car for an employee, right, a team member, and it was awesome to be able to do that.
Isn't that
and
awesome?
Then, you know, support the community, give back school supplies to kids. Like, as we were turning profit, right, we were using it. And it's an extension of your heart. Like,
one of the problems in society is that people love generosity, but they like to be generous with other people's money.
Mm.
That's what socialism is, right? I forget who said it, but they said socialism is, you know, being generous with other people's money.
So as we're having this conversation, I'm chatting with ChatGPT. GPT, sorry. Mm-hmm. I asked, how many small businesses do $1 million in sales? Roughly 9% of small businesses in the U.S. make $1 million or more in annual revenue. Here's a breakdown. There's about 33 million small businesses in the U.S. Around 3 million of them hit the $1 million revenue mark. So the vast majority, that's 80%, the vast majority, do less than $500,000 per year in sales. So when you're sitting here talking statistics, 80% of small businesses in the U.S. do.
You want to hear one even worse than that?
Yeah, so tell me something worse.
Another stat that I'm going to use next week in the presentation is 81% of small business owners are 2 weeks away from overdrafting their business checking account.
Yeah,
and so it's a profit problem. It's a profit crisis. A lot of people are accidentally running a nonprofit on accident.
Yeah.
You know, and like we have hopes and dreams, but then it kind of fades and then you kind of go quietly into the night and your soul just gets crushed. And we got to stop feeling bad for being profitable. That's why I like dollars as being certificates of good deeds. You know, the money that Mike's earned is evidence of the good he's done in the world.
Yes.
The other thing, like biblically speaking, just to do a little nerdy churchy thing, even if you don't if you think that's nonsense, there's no economic pie. It doesn't exist. The economy works like a garden, not a pie. And what that means is like the consumption by people creates production, similar to if you eat an apple and it puts 10 seeds in the ground, it creates more apples. And as you make money and you invest and travel and go out, hang out with Conor McGregor, which you have to tell us that in a minute. But as we're doing things and flying, it's lubricating and creating opportunity for everything else. And so this whole idea of, and I think this comes from poverty programming, that me winning means someone's losing, it's literally just not true. I'm not saying positive, warm, fuzzy things. It's not how it works.
Right.
Me creating wealth creates more opportunity. You know, that. I don't know. What do you think?
It is. It's stimulating, because you're leveling up your team who makes more money, and then that money goes elsewhere.
Yeah, like, Debbie, my friend Debbie was just here when you guys got here. And her house burned down. Mm-hmm. And so by her building another house, it's doing all this good stuff, right?
Yep.
And so opportunity begets opportunity. And that's how it works.
Agreed.
Yeah. So what's up with this Conor McGregor thing? How did a window film kid with no confidence that became an entrepreneur whose dad wasn't proud of him but then became very successful go hang out with Conor McGregor?
Well, it's so crazy. I've had so many opportunities to meet so many celebrities through cars. Most celebrities and most people who have made an impact on some larger scale, for some reason, love automobiles.
Yeah.
And so the love of automobiles and working on automobiles allows you to travel and meet all types of different walks of life. And I've met some very amazing people in my life. I was in Amsterdam doing a show for Expel, which I do consulting for, and I was a speaker at their conference. And I met a friend of mine I have not seen in a while that was from Ireland. And he talked us into flying over there. And we were in Dublin having dinner at a really nice restaurant. And I said, hey, Conor McGregor's bar is here. I said, let's go over there and check it out. And the Roadhouse sign, I knew he had the Roadhouse sign there. And I walked in on a Monday. They were closing. And the old owner, Liam, decided to let us in, have a beer, talk to Ed, his five-star Michelin chef. And we got to know these guys for like an hour and a half, and they were sitting around waiting for Conor to come in. He was training, and he likes to eat a steak on his way home, so they'll wait around for him to come in there and eat because it's a beautiful, awesome restaurant. Like, the food is absolutely amazing at his Black Forge restaurant. He also has a stout beer there that he is partners with. It's actually really, really good. It's a little lighter than Guinness. I thought it was better than Guinness. Anyway, he didn't make it. And we became friends with these guys, and they invited me back for a VIP section to sit with Conor because Tucker Carlson was interviewing him. And we sat next to him, had some steaks, and listened to some very authentic Irish music. Got to talk to him for a little while, meet him, and took me in the back, got a picture with his belt, his weight belt, his UFC championship belt.
So cool.
And we got to see the interactions of the guy behind the scenes and in front of the scenes. And what a charismatic, outgoing performer he is. He has absolutely learned how to be a character. And one-on-one, he's like any movie star, any celebrity I've ever met. They're one-on-one, they're great people, they're humble, they're very nice. But on stage, just like me, when I get on stage, I'm not like I am today. When I get on stage, I have power, authority, and initiative. And that's how these guys are when they're out in the public. They're selling themselves 24/7 when a camera's on them. But behind the scenes, when a camera's not on them, they're normal people just like anyone else who have real thoughts and real agendas and real goals. He's a family man. He's got multiple kids. He's still with the same woman that actually supported him through his career. Has he done some bad things? Yes, absolutely. We all have. Fame and fortune changes people to an extent that it invites new people that aren't always have your best interest. So when you think that you're surrounding around people that are going to think the way you do, my girlfriend says it best, Mike, not everybody thinks good. So when you go into a conversation and you're doing good and you're doing good things for other people, they don't have the same intentions that you do. It's the intent. So if I'm always putting good out there, I think other people are going to do good as well. But Conor is an amazing guy. It was very last minute. So it's very important for you to talk to people, be yourself, be authentic, and be real. And it was nice to be invited. I was not a guy that walked in like acting like I had a celebrity crush. They're just people. I put my jeans on just like they do. And it was very, very humbling to be invited.
It brings up a good point that's a business principle, just about networking. And yep. Before we hit record, we're talking about mindsets, skill sets, and network. And you were saying, you know, one of your success tips is just talk to everybody, meet everybody. I'm curious, Pat, from you too. Mm-hmm. You have a new business partnership with a stud muffin of an entrepreneur guy. How did that happen, networking, meeting these people? I mean, how valuable is one good relationship?
Oh, it's a game changer, like absolute game changer. And so, like, through my story is like growing the company, right? Seeing it grow. And they reached out to me. So I was doing public speaking. I was doing some big things in the exterior cleaning industry. And they're like, man, this is like, you know, Pat Clark is the Larry Janeski of, you know, basement systems. And that's what he did. He made his name in basement systems. Okay. Over 35 companies, you know, he does very well. He's a you know, billionaire, if you will.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And he actually saved a bank that was going out of business and actually revived it, if you will. And so he's doing some amazing thing in his community there in Connecticut. And, you know, through those businesses, he had a system and he sells products. He's got 35 plus patents on products that now he sells to all these dealer networks that he has. And he's partnering with companies as well to bring him in. And they have the School of Entrepreneurship and all these things that he's developed over the 35 years. And he started just like all of us, right? He was 17 years old, and the building boom was happening. And, you know, somebody called and he put an ad in the papers, like, you know, carpentry, no job too big or small. And they called and they said, well, can you build a house? He's like, well, I think we need to meet. Totally. I'm like, yeah, 17 years old. And so anyway, he ended up going, and the guy, you know, was like, yeah, let's do it. And so he ended up building his first house.
At 17?
At a very, yes, that at a very wild. Young age. And so, you know, he went to building multiple houses. And what happened was he had a sub that poured a foundation that cracked. And Larry is like, he's all about science. And he went in and he was like, how do I fix this problem? You know, because in the name of good customer service. Mm-hmm. So he figured out the solution. And then he went in and he actually wrote for 2 years. He sat down and wrote the book of solutions, 4 basement crawl spaces. Mm-hmm. And he invented clean space. Which funny is, I was in mold remediation in the very beginning when I started my business, because
that's where they go and crawl. They like put that plastic in there,
that vapor barrier. Yep,
yeah. Dehumidifiers.
Dehumidifiers. The sump pumps. He does all that, and he has patents now on the sump pumps, the drainage, like all the mm-hmm. things. And he actually wish he'd like patented the name Clean Space, because there's other things, but he invented mm-hmm. it. And so it was actually against building code in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And he fought and fought, and now it's not. Now it's part of right. it, because the science.
Yeah.
And so it's amazing to see that. And like,
it's amazing to me that Pat Clark from the Trailer Park is business partners with a billionaire. You have a nationwide franchise. You have a wife that adores you. You have kids that look up to you. And you're young.
Yeah.
You know, peak earning years, by the way, for anybody listening, for a man is between 50 and 60 years old. Hmm. And I think I told you this last night when I was talking to you, because In a way, I look at everything I've done so far as like pre-training or something,
yeah.
you know? I mean, because was it Tony Robbins says people overestimate what they can achieve in a year and they underestimate what they can achieve in a decade. And it's going to yeah. be wild. I'm going to get my popcorn and just keep watching what happens with you, right? You have God's favor in your life. You're smart. You're learning. And being around people like that is insane. I'm sure he just thinks different.
Yeah,
the way
oh,
he approaches
sure.
everything is going to be at a
yes.
higher order
yes.
because we're not there yet. But it's amazing. What about you, Mike, with just networking as a business principle and the importance of it?
Well, when you meet guys like Michael Jordan through the owner of the Mercedes dealership, that you fly on a plane to Las Vegas to go to the SEMA show, and you're invited to fly on a private jet, and you're tinting cars inside the Mercedes dealership, it's because
it's just an average Tuesday for you.
It's just, it is now. But so the thing about networking is I earned the respect of the owner of the Mercedes dealership tinting his cars. And we became friends. And he would call me at midnight telling me a car would come in and he wanted me there in the morning tinting it. And I always said yes. I answered my phone at midnight. Mm-hmm. So people of authority, people who are someone that have a lot more than you, the way to earn their respect is to always answer their phone calls.
Yeah.
If they take the time to call you, you answer.
Yeah.
Period.
That's right.
And if you're the first one to answer, you're the first one to act, they're the first one they can call when they need something, and you add value to their life. And yep. when you add value to their life, they will keep you in their life.
In their circle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's so true. I was in the middle of a Zoom call with an attorney this week. We're interviewing an attorney for some legal papers and stuff, just like to have our guy. I haven't really found my guy. Mm-hmm. So we're talking to this guy, and just mid-Zoom call, I get a phone call from a particular person. And I'm like, I'm really sorry, but I'll be right back. For that exact reason,
yeah.
right? It's just like, I'm not sending this to voicemail, you know? And I think saying yes, but it requires humility to do that, does it not? To say yes, to serve, to look for ways to add value, to play the long game.
Well, I'll tell you a quick story. I don't know how long you want to be on this podcast, but the way I earned the respect of the Mercedes dealer, okay? I was a one-year-old business called Lightning Mike's Window Tinting in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I tinted windows for 0 dealerships. I was doing 100% retail. I'd probably say 80% of my client base was urban-based, mm-hmm. Ethnic diversity.
Yeah, you're pimping out like super cool.
I was doing a couple of Supremes and like,
yeah.
I'm just gonna leave it there with like rims,
yeah.
big rims,
yeah.
big okay. thumping stereo systems. I was very, very busy. I was just me. I was the only tinter, but I had a guy selling accessories and rims and things. What happened is everyone in Charlotte, North Carolina knew I was very good at tinting. The Mercedes dealership lost their person that they were sending cars to. And the owner of the dealership liked black limo tint on every car. And he would have a demo about every 3 or 4 weeks. He would drive a new SL500 or some type of car that came in that was an AMG that he wanted blacked out. Well, they called my shop. I answered the phone. It was a general manager, Bo. He said, hey, I got Skipper's car. No problem. Bring it over. They bring it over. I tint the windows in probably a half hour. It was limo tint on a CL500, two-door car with auto-drop windows. When you open and close the windows drop. It was like the first year that ever happened. So they go take the car back. I take the car back, actually, and said, hey, somebody, you know, run me back over there. And I told the manager and the service porter, do not roll the windows down for at least a couple hours. Let the car sit, because as soon as you do, the window tint's wet, mm-hmm. and it'll suck up moisture. What do? They take the car back in the back, and they get a call about 30 minutes later. Same manager said, hey, man, I thought you knew how to tint windows. I said, what are you talking about? He goes, well, the window tint's peeling off. So I come over there, and I bring film. I know exactly what's going on. I go in the back, and I'm in the detail bay now. And I'm in the detail bay ripping off the two windows. And I decided, you know what, I'm only going to rip one of them off. And then Bo came over there, and I said, hey, Bo, I'm not going to redo these windows. He said, why? He says, because the owner wants to take the car home right now. And I said, hey, bro, I told you guys not. I'm yelling at this guy. I have three customers waiting at my shop right now that are paying customers, mm-hmm. and I'm dealing with what I consider. And I'm telling the general manager of the Mercedes dealership that you don't know what you're doing. Your detail guys don't know what you're doing, and you're not listening to me. I said to leave the car outside and to let the windows sit for a little while because they have auto drop windows and they need to let the film and the moisture dissipate.
Right. Yep.
The owner of the dealership was standing at the little top and he was listening to me and he walks over and he goes, hey, I'm Skipper Beck. And I said, what's going on? And I said, well, this guy right here won't listen to me. And I said, I've told him twice. He's a general manager. Okay, and I'm over there telling the guy he won't listen to me and telling him that I said, sir, don't you have a ton of cars here? Can't you drive something else home? You know, and I started talking to the guy like he worked for me. And I said, I've got customers at my store that are waiting on me, and I've got cars and money I'm losing dealing with this. And he looked over and put his arm around me and looked at the general manager and said, this is our window tint guy. No one will ever tint our windows but me.
I could see how that situation could go the exact opposite, too.
It could. I was willing to lose the place because I was a new business owner that had only been in business for a year, and I had three – I had my accessory manager.
What's the principle, though, that you
The principle is I was losing money. The principle is I was losing money, and I was willing to stand up mm-hmm. for being me, for being confident that I was losing money. But I was over here dealing with this customer service issue that I had told the general manager at the very beginning when I dropped the car off to let it wait. They did not wait. The owner heard me explain that situation.
And he vibed with your
And he vibed
confidence.
With me and said, listen, this guy knows what he's talking about. He knows what he's doing. And I like the fact that he has come back over here. I didn't just call him and say, hey, man, I'm busy at my shop. Bring the car back over. No, I drove back over with film, willing to do that car mm-hmm. over right now. Because I wanted to prove to them I was good and I did know what I was doing. And you're insulting me, telling me I am very good at what I do. Yeah. And you were insulting me, telling me I didn't know how to do my job.
I think right there, too, like success leaves clues. Because that brings me back, too. We did an apartment complex, $150,000 apartment complex.
Yeah.
And the property manager calls back, you know, a week later and says, look, there's mildew growing back in the breezeways. I'm like, there's no way, but... You know, no big deal. We're going to take care of it. This was 10 hours away from our shop. So I got my sales guy. I said, we're jumping in the truck with pump-up sprayers. We're going to service this customer. I was out there the next day. And then on the way back, after we did everything, we walked her around, right? But we showed up with, you know, confidence in that we're the expert, that let's figure this out. And then she called me back on the way home in that 10-hour drive with $250,000 and more contracts.
Nice.
But you have to show up with authority. You have to be the expert.
I've noticed in business, too, like problems in business are oftentimes the biggest opportunities of all. Because mm-hmm. like the way you show up during a crisis, a conflict, whatever, is huge,
yeah.
right? Like if you own it, if you run towards problems, not away from them like you did when you drove to the dealership.
You know, that's mm-hmm. a prime example of what I coach in Google reviews. I was at a seminar where people were in a roundtable discussion, and one of the guys there says, man, we're the only 5-star Google blah, blah, blah. And then one of the other guys goes, yeah, man, I got a bad review yesterday, and, you know, I went off on this guy and blah, 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 and he knocked me down. And I looked at the guy and I had to educate him. And I said, bro, I said, be thankful you got a bad review. I said, be thankful. If you are 5 stars and you've never had a bad review ever, you're fake. You are a fake business. I said, I'm going to tell you what Ruth Chris, general manager, told me years ago. He said, we allocate 3% of all steaks to come back in a year, because if we're not cooking enough steaks, if we're not messing up a couple of steaks here and there, we're not cooking enough steaks. So the moral of the story is that your mistake, how you handle the mistake, allocate knowing that you're going to make mistakes. Every Google review I've ever gotten bad, the very first thing I do is I tell the person, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to write a bad review. But it's not a bad review. It's a way for me to change a process that was wrong in our industry or what we're doing wrong. So I have a meeting about our Google bad reviews, and I say, hey, what can we do better to not let this same problem happen again? And we write a rebuttal to that customer. We offer them dinner. We offer them $50 for their inconvenience. We do something to admit the fault, to admit the thing, but thanking them so I can implement a process that can be changed, that doesn't happen again.
And from a marketing perspective, just as a sidebar, 5 out of 5 stars is not trustworthy. People psychologically, they try, I think it's 4.6 or 4.7 is the most trust people have on, you know, if you're on Amazon and you're buying a product, you don't want it to be 5. Because we all know intrinsically that's impossible.
Yeah.
Right? But like the 4.6, so hey, don't hate your haters as much. Haters are your elevators. Anyway, let's get ready to wrap this up. What's maybe a good signing off thought, a word of encouragement, some piece of advice? There's tariffs, there's inflation, there's uncertainty. People think they need leads. They're confused about profit and revenue. I'm telling you, you got to come to our challenge, frappchallenge.com. Yeah. But in general, what do you want to say as we wrap up?
I've got something to wrap this up. One thing that I have said in many business seminars, you got to pat yourself on the back every once in a while, and and you got to celebrate wins. I think what happens is in life, we're so chasing a goalpost that is unreachable to most, right? But when you hit a plateau in any level of business, doesn't matter what it is, you need to ring the bell. And what I use as an analogy is in sports, I use football. When someone scores a touchdown in football, does the whole team celebrate? It does. The whole team, the coach, everybody, the fans, everybody cheers, the band's going crazy, everybody goes nuts. We need to do that in business culture more. We need to have a celebration of wins, and it needs to be a win by the entire team. We need to spank each other on the butts, pat each other on the back, and say, good job. Because what we've had is we hide behind our phones and we don't interact with people like we used to because of COVID, because of whatever reasons. I'm not giving anybody a certain reason. But you know what? A hug, a high five, a pat on the back, a that a boy or that a girl. We need those more. And I want to end on, we need to celebrate. The little wins add up to be big wins. So if we're not celebrating, why are we playing the game?
There's a lot of fire in there.
A lot. That's awesome.
If you can't find joy in the journey, or if you don't understand that the process actually is the payoff, because the end goal that you get never satisfies anyway. I mean, not to say you're not excited when you hit your goal. You are for about 5 minutes, for a week, for a month. It never feels like you think it will, no matter whatever level you're. There's a new devil at every level, right? So we move the yardstick, never celebrating the small wins. So I love that.
You got to do it. It shapes you throughout the whole journey, man. You know, it's like, you know, you see all the things, and like we're still crushing it. Numbers are up. Every new franchise we're putting on is crushing it. It's like, you know,
well, the franchise you were just saying did like $6,000 the first day or something in revenue, right?
Yeah.
That's insane.
And it's like, you know, and the numbers are off the charts. And he's like, you know, you hear all these things. You can't get this in my market. You can't get this here. You know, it's like, you know, cut out all the noise. Cut out all the things you can't change, right? And start focusing on the things you can change and go after it. And, you know, the world's big, you know what I mean? And we're just getting this little piece of the pie in each market. And it's like, you can do it. Just go for it. Cut out the bad noise. You know, focus on the positivity. Love up on the people around you. And it's gonna change.
I agree. I believe. You guys are legends and scholars. I appreciate you taking the time. Man, this is so good. And for anybody listening, go to frappchallenge.com unless you hate money. Go to frappchallenge.com unless you hate your dog. No, I'm just kidding. You don't have to come to the challenge, but we're going to be live, and I'm going to walk you through some really clever out-of-the-box frameworks to increase the frequency in which people buy from you, the referral channels and partnerships you open up, how to manipulate your average ticket through asymmetrical marketing, and of course, how to manipulate pricing. There's four different ways you can manipulate pricing to print money for yourself. And you're not a bad person for making profit. You need to pay your staff more. You need to have an emergency fund. You need better equipment, technology. You need to be making the money that the 5 years in the future version of your company needs. But you got to start doing it now. Don't act your age when it comes to your business. We got to get the prices up. So take care. We love you. God bless. Do you want to weaponize your brain and turn it into a money-making machine? Consider joining Warplan Coaching. You'll get thousands of dollars in exclusive courses and training, a private community, a chance to come to in-person meetups at Warplan Studios, and access to myself for Q&A every single month. Want to know the best part? It's free. Plus, we'll send you a private weekly newsletter full of money-making tips and cutting-edge ideas. Just go to warplan.com to sign up. Hey, I'm your biggest fan. I'm rooting for you. We'll see you next time.